And now, Canada Hoops, hosted by Maddie Ireland.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Canada Hoops. It's your boy, Maddie. We're forever grateful for your continued support. Please continue to download, like, and share us. Today's episode will be a fun one as we bring you the second annual Canadian Basketball Awards here on Canada Hoops. Plus, we will dive into the recent announcement by Canada Basketball with respect to the summer core of players for the senior men's national team and the upcoming FIBA World Cup qualifiers. And as well, the phenom Elijah Fisher has announced he will join the Texas Tech Red Raiders. We'll talk about the recent NBA draft announcements from a Canadian's perspective. And to help us cover all the excitement, we welcome back our guy and Canada basketball specialist, Scott Witter. Scott, appreciate you coming back from Canada.
Maddie, very happy to be here, man. I love coming on your show. I love listening to all the great podcasts you're putting out with some fantastic guests. So thank you. Happy to be here.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to this. I love the conversations we've always had. And, your insight, especially on Twitter, everybody loves you and, values your knowledge. So it's always great to have you back. Things are good, right? We had a quick chat before we recorded, but life's good on your end, right?
Life's good on my end. I think we're in a bit of a reprieve, and everything's going well. I'm actually going to get my first trip back to Canada. For those that don't know, I'm an expat living in the States, and I have not been up to Canada since COVID started, and that's been bugging me. My family's been able to come down. But me having a family and kids and all that sort of stuff, we have not gone up there since pre-COVID. So I'm heading up there in July. I'm pretty excited.
Oh, that's cool. That's good to hear, man. That'll be a deserved trip after the last couple of years we've had. So happy to hear that. Man, before we dive into our awards and other topics, there's a lot of excitement around Canada basketball, the program, individual players. Give us a sense of what the temperature right now is for Canada basketball. It sure feels like the excitement is red hot for the red and white. Michael Bartlett, the CEO, he's done a lot of interviews. He's really put himself out there to become a face of the program, letting everybody know what's happening. He's our friend. He's joined us on the podcast. I always like to gauge the realities of Canada basketball through you.
Yeah.
What's your excitement level at, and what's your reality at right now?
Oh man, it's a roller coaster. And, I might date myself with this analogy. You're going to get it. I don't know how many of our audience members will, but sometimes with Canada basketball, I feel like I'm Charlie Brown trying to kick the football, right? And I get really, really excited to line up and take that big kick, and it gets pulled away, and I go flying. But I'm ready to take that kick again. I'm pretty excited about this. We've talked about it in the past, and I've pointed that out, that this was talked about in the Toronto days of like having guys committed and getting guys bought in. And, I guess it didn't happen at that time, even though Canada basketball tried. So, I don't know the details behind all of this, in the sense that, how do you hold these guys' feet to the fire? Is there something in writing? Is it the fact that 14 names have been named and it's public, and you, me, the media, and everybody else can kind of hold these guys' feet to the fire? Or maybe there's even something in writing that these guys have kind of signed up for. I don't know if it has teeth or anything like that. But you have 14 players, 11 NBA guys, most of our best players, almost all, obviously some guys missing, like, Andrew Wiggins and Brandon Clark, Chris Boucher, a few others. But this represents a massive turnout for Canada basketball. I think people need to be, have a bit of a reality check. It doesn't mean that each one of these guys is going to be showing up for every event. There's seven, I think, FIBA basketball events for the men between now and the Olympics. And that includes, multiple World Cup qualifier windows. We got the first, we got window three coming up in less than a month. Yeah, right. Less than a month. And then window four in the very late August, and then the AmeriCup. So we got three coming up this summer. And we already have guys like Ken Birch with knee surgery. We probably don't see Jamal Murray. We probably don't see Lugans Dort, both recovering from pretty severe injuries still. I'm sure there's some other guys that have contract issues. There's nobody that's really a free agent, but you have a lot of guys that are in that kind of young players in their contract extension summer, some that could be in contract extensions like O'Shea Brissett and Lou Dort.
Right.
But guys like Barrett, guys like Nikhil, those guys are all kind of in that kind of contract extension that might hold them out. They're looking at some big money coming in. Don't know. They may be in or may not. We'll see. Obviously, in probably less than a month, probably in a few weeks, we'll see who shows up at camp. But yes, I think I'm pretty excited about this. I think this is what they've needed. All that stuff of having continuity and consistency. Yes, we've known that for a long time. I haven't been able to do it as Canada for a variety of reasons. I still am skeptical about that. I think it's tough. I think it's tough getting the same guys kind of summer after summer after summer. But we'll see what they can do. The flip side of this, I always said, get the talent. Well, the talent's here as well. So even if it's, seven, eight guys that are kind of consistent from summer to summer, there's enough talent here on its own to field a very competitive team. A team that should, easily qualify for the World Cup, but right. Should be in the running for finishing top two amongst North and South America, which qualifies you automatically for the Olympics. Really, the competition there is USA basketball, tough competition, and probably Argentina, which is a bit of a declining power out there. But if we can get ahead of, those two or one of those two, we qualify immediately into the Olympics. Otherwise, we got to go through one of those nasty Olympic qualifiers again. I'd like other people out there to join me and in the belief the World Cup is more interesting. There's 32 teams, everybody's there. Where the Olympics, it's kind of 12 teams. It's missing some of the best teams in the world. I really want people to kind of zone in on the World Cup, which will be in the mostly in the Philippines next summer. But yeah, right. I don't know. What are your thoughts? How are you gauging things?
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited, and I've learned to sort of become patient and realistic, and I'm happy to see the infamous supper in Las Vegas kind of gained traction, and then now we're getting this announcement of the summer core of the 14 players, 11 NBA guys, like you said. Yeah. I think that's key. I like the fact that Rowan and Nick made that effort, and it's paid off where they've gotten the result and the commitment. And let's be realistic, not all these guys are going to show up to every event, but their desire is there. They're not committing these next two or three summers without that desire. So I think that's what the fan base ultimately wants is hey, we know these guys are interested. They do care. Yes, they have lives, contract extensions. Corey Joe is about to be a father for the first time. Kelly's getting married. I mean, we all have lives and we all get to do these other things ourselves, and they're allowed to do that too. Right. So, I agree. The World Cup to me is huge. I don't want to see a poor result there, but I think we will do really well, and I don't want to rely on a last chance tournament. We got a long ways to go before that becomes an issue, but I love the World Cup too, because it's straight hoops. It's just a tournament. Just on basketball, the Olympics is kind of overshadowed by other events, and I think we're going to do really well for the World Cup.
Maddie, let me put you on the spot. Would you go to the Philippines, a beautiful, beautiful country where they're into basketball more than the United States and Canada?
It's their national sport.
I went there maybe a decade ago, and checked out some of the beautiful islands, spent some time in Manila, and then went down south through the islands, but rolled into the Manila airport, and there's like just like murals of NBA players everywhere. Right. They love the NBA. It's hilarious. So yeah, it's going to be awesome. I'm actually, you know, hoping to go. I don't know if I'll be able to pull it together, but we'll see how it goes. I'm much, much, much more interested in going to this one than the one in China.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. That's kind of a bucket list thing where I would love to do that. Maybe we can put a little contingent together and we'll go and watch the men compete. I think, you know, the timing with the announcement, of course, going back to that, everything's lining up really nice. I think we'll have enough of a roster out of that core to really help us this summer. And, you know, and the winter guys, they're going to do their part too. And,
yeah,
you know, the World Cup will be huge. You know, yeah. It's good to see, right? And I like that, yeah. You know, I like that.
That's like something. Sorry, I was going to say don't interrupt. Sorry, I just want to point that out because you mentioned the Winter Core, and it was very clear in the press release that Basketball Canada put out that they deem this as the senior men's national team is a combination of the Winter Core and the Summer Core.
Right.
So there's a lot of speculation out there of like, oh, is Wiggins gonna show up? Obviously, I don't know if people know, but Wiggins was obviously asked, and he said he couldn't commit to the three years. I'm sure that was the same for Boucher and Brandon Clark and others. You know, they can still show up on a case-by-case basis. Yes, that's true. But you might be pulling, you know, guys from the winter court. Maybe different for a guy like Wiggins, but, you know, do you go after Kyle Alexander before you go after, like, Brandon Clark, right? Because Kyle Alexander is one of the best Canadian bigs outside the NBA. And, right. You know, is experienced in FIBA and is in tune with what the national team's doing, knows the system, knows the coaches. So I think you're going to see a lot of winter core guys on these rosters. When guys step out, I think it's the winter core guys who show up first. Things like the AmeriCup, AmeriCup in September. I don't know if we're going to be throwing like full NBA contingent at something like that. Maybe some of the young guys go, but I think it's going to be a lot of the winter core guys. Kind of a blended team or some of the U23 guys show up. I don't know. But you kind of got to look at this as a combined roster, I think.
No, agreed. And you know what? Yeah, they've said it. They don't want everyone to sort of focus on the summer court being the end all be all. And, you know, there will be guys that can't play for different reasons. They want everyone to be aware as far as the players say, hey, yeah, you know, there may not be a spot for you if you want to jump in. But, you know, I think if Andrew wants to jump in at any point, you know, I still feel he's our best athlete.
Yeah.
Athletically, he's still the top guy for us. You know, it's going to be fluid. I think I tweeted that. It's going to be a fluid roster at all times. But
yeah.
The desire is there. It's nice to see. And there's guys on that winter court that, listen, man, they can make our best 12.
Yeah.
Like a sniper like Kyle Wilcher, I mean,
yeah.
You know, suited for the FIBA game, we'll take him. Yeah. You know, I love Kyle Alexander as well. I didn't actually know a lot about him in terms of his game and these last couple winter windows. He really impressed me. He's got a good motor. He's really strong. You know, he comes from a hoops family in Canada. I like him a lot, so I think he can slide in, right? So
he fills such a hole too, right?
Yeah,
not like you know, the center position is a position of strength for Canada. So we need guys like that. He fills a massive hole for the winter team, winter core, and is, you know, amongst, you know, the, you know, you don't have to go too far down the list of top Canadian centers before you get to him, to be honest.
Agreed. Agreed. All right. You want to roll a few awards out here? That
yeah, man.
We put some, awards out on Twitter and, had the fan base poll it, good response, similar to last year. And we're trying to keep it fun and light and never too serious here. We will start with the Canadian NBA MVP this year. There's some great choices. You know, it's such a cool thing as some of our players are truly becoming superstars. I'll do what the fan base first got. The fans this year went with our man, Andrew Wiggins, 65% of the vote. Everyone's loved what Andrew's done this year. Who do you have for the MVP this year, Scott?
Okay. Yeah, I want to give a bit of a preamble just because this was a weird season, man. This was a season of terrible first halves and great second halves. You know, looking at RJ, looking at Boucher, O'Shea, you know. Wow. Injuries. This was a very injury plagued season for Canadians. Shea, obviously Jamal Murray out the entire season. I think Dylan Brooks only played 32 games. Lou Dort played 50 games. Kelly Olynyk played 40 games. Ken Birch seemed injured or having COVID or almost the whole season and only played 55 games. So this was a harder one, for sure. Getting to the MVP between RJ, Dylan, Shea, and Wiggins. You know, I'm kind of not there. I'm going to toss out two to start. I'm not really there with RJ. He just had a pretty brutal first half, but then was awesome in the second half. It was pretty amazing to see that jump.
Yeah.
You know, I think the efficiency wasn't really there for most of the year. I was hoping for an efficiency bump, but I think a lot of what happened was the New York Knicks got a lot worse around him. Still don't have the shooting and still don't have the point guard play. Julius Randle was a huge regression. So things collapsed around RJ and he, you know, he bumped up his scoring all the way up to, I think, you know, 25 points per game, you know, post all-star, where he was, you know, pre all-star, maybe down kind of around that 16, 17 range. But, you know, toss him aside, toss Dylan aside. I don't think he was there as a total package, missed a lot. So it kind of comes down to Shea and Wiggins. Shea's clearly the best Canadian offensive player of the season. And it's not necessarily the points he puts up. It's a bad OKC team. We know you can be a top offensive option on a bad team and it can distort things. But a lot of this is like how efficient he still does it. He is a legit playmaker and finisher. He's truly elite there. You start digging into the analytics. You know, that's just the eye test. You can see it with the analytics. He's kind of among the best in the league with this season with Giannis and Ja Morant and LeBron and kind of that finishing skills and playmaking metrics and stuff like that. He's there, you know, and this is all while facing, you know, the most double teams probably anybody sees out there and getting the least amount of space in the NBA. So it's pretty crazy to kind of think what he does on offense. I think he's vastly underrated there. I think he's amongst the elite in the league. However, his defense isn't kind of near as impressive, and that might be he's carrying such an offensive load. It's not bad. It's kind of league average from my perspective. You know, like I said, he just might be taking so much on offense that he's not quite there. So that kind of took me to, you know, Andrew Wiggins, who, you know, I really like the defensive side of the game. I just, you know, I think it gets underrated sometimes. And he really impacted the game on both ends of the floor. So he's my MVP as well. I'm going with the fans on this one. He was voted as an all-star game starter. a very, very rare feat for a Canadian. I recognize those results were juiced. Think the K-pop star Bam Bam had a little thing going. I think he's their global ambassador, and that probably goosed things. But he was still there as a making the all-star team in my mind. Maybe the starting was a little bit inflated, but he was certainly an all-star this year in my mind. He did have a better first half than second half. Pre-all-star, he was kind of 18 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists. Good shooting, 48% from the field, 41% from three. Iffy free throw shooting, kind of around 66%, almost 2.5 three-pointers per game. He was efficient. Post-all-star, that dipped meaningfully. A little bit in points, but his efficiency went down pretty significantly. Playoffs, he's kind of he's picking on a different role with the playoffs that we're seeing. He's actually one of the playoff leaders in offensive rebounding, which is pretty crazy.
Right.
But I don't think a lot of people are fully aware of like his defensive acumen. It's always tough to measure defense. It is a little bit more the eye test. You see him getting the toughest defensive assignments. He was the primary guy on Luka for the Western Conference Finals. He's usually the primary guy on any of the wings. He's defending, 3-4 positions. Taking a look at some of the defensive metrics and analytics, he's up there. He's not elite, but he's very good. And he kind of excelled, doing the dirty work, the rebounding, embracing tough defensive assignments. I'm a little bit of a sucker on the defensive side. And I think it's overlooked, especially amongst the star players. A lot of stars get a free pass, I think, because they're just dropping. Trae Young is one of the worst defensive players in the league. James Harden's always one of the worst defensive guys in the league. And people, glorify them to, the highest ends. So there you have it. Andrew Wiggins, my 2021-22 NBA season Canadian MVP.
I love it. And we'll hit the trifecta. Wiggs is my pick, too. And I just loved, and I, you have the crazy stats, and I appreciate that. But, when in the qualifying tournament in Victoria, he was our best player. And he showed us, like, I'm still that guy. And you and I joke about it all the time on Twitter about Wiggins Island, and we never left Wiggins Island. And he showed us he is still him. And he carried it into the year. I think the tournament gave him a lot of confidence. And it was so great to just see him have that consistency, make the all-star team. The starting spot was juice, like you said. And he's been really productive in the playoffs. He played the most minutes in that last game against Dallas for the Warriors. Made Luka's going to get his, but Andrew made it tougher. I'm happy for him too. He seems really happy, really comfortable with his role. And I think just given that, Shea is probably the best Canadian in the league. If Jamal was healthy, I think we said that last season on the episode too, maybe Jamal would have something to say. But we didn't get to see him this year. But Andrew is a guy that, there's been a lot of hype for so long, and it's just nice to see him playing so well. And the Warriors really need him. They value him. They've said that throughout the playoffs. Steve Kerr is raving about what he brings. So I got Wiggs as the NBA Canadian MVP as well.
Nice. Unanimous. Quick shout out to Brandon Clark, who discreetly put up a pretty efficient offensive and defensive season this year. Love to see it, because he took a deep dive last year. And I think he was probably, honestly to say, in the mix with, RJ and Brooks, if you value both ends of the floor and efficiency and things like that, which I tend to, but maybe not that high, but.
Since you're a defensive guy, we got the NBA Canadian Defensive Player of the Year. The fans, 52%, polled Lou Dort.
Lou Dort.
Lou Gens. Your pick, Scott. Who do you have as a defensive player?
Oh, man. I'm going against the fans on this one. I love Lou Dort, but you know, this is a hard one. Like I said, we were talking about this earlier, like defense, there's not a lot of statistics that are good for defense. Right. You know, so you kind of got to look at some other things. Eye test, you know, I trust the coaches, right? Who are the coaches assigning the toughest defensive assignments to, right?
Right.
And Lou Dort's up there. A lot of the stats that do have some, I think, meaning and teeth, you know, weren't necessarily backing him up this year. Lou's got this legendary reputation, especially on Twitter, and it might be moving a little bit into the extreme side of things on the table for me, or at least this season. And then, you know, it's tough. OKC's a tough position. It's a tough team. It's not a winning organization right now. So I kind of have to discount things a little bit there. Chris Boucher is more of a bench role player for me. He was one of the four that was nominated. You know, great player, but not kind of that starting caliber defensive leader that I think Wiggins and Dylan Brooks and Lou Dort are.
Right.
So I kind of tossed him out. Wiggins was very good, as noted above, but I think Dylan Brooks was even better. You know, we talked a little bit about guys missing good chunks of season. You know, but I'm still going to go with Dylan Brooks here. I think the Grizzlies went from being one of the worst defensive teams to one of the when he was out, and then one of the best defensive teams when he came back. I do think Dylan Brooks is a fringe kind of all defense type player. He competes as hard as anybody out there. He uses that big body and length. He uses physicality to defend all sorts of the best scorers in the NBA. You know, sometimes varying levels of success, but he's given the tough assignments night after night after night. And it's rare to see kind of occurrences of defensive failure with Dylan Brooks. Let's get away from recency bias. He didn't have the greatest playoffs. I think right. He admitted it himself. He didn't play well. He was plagued by foul trouble a lot. He still has to get that under control, but that kind of defines his game. He's kind of living on the edge. He's pushing things physically as far as he can. That gets him into trouble sometimes, but it's who he is. I did kind of dig into the analytics a little. You know, I kind of got this eye test, but let's look for some analytics to kind of support that. There's one kind of I like the, I don't know if anyone gets into, you know, 538's War Raptor on the defensive side. That's kind of an individual plus minus measurement that uses also kind of wins above replacement and accounts for the playing time of the players. It's one of the better kind of defensive, all-encompassing defensive metrics. Dylan Brooks was up there in that one. You know, he was kind of around 13th in the league. And the you know, the top guys in the league are you know, who you would expect, right? It's you know, it's your Rudy Gobert and Gary Payton II and Alex Caruso and Draymond Green and Joel Embiid and Jared Allen and, you know, Bam and, you know, Derek White, guys like that. And then, you know, there's Dylan Brooks at kind of 13. So, it backs up the eye test. There's a couple other ones out there that do the same thing just for, you know, people want to know. Andrew Wiggins is probably next on that list, kind of in the 40s. Brandon Clark is kind of in the 40s. Lou Dort's maybe in the 60s, 70s. Chris Boucher's in that range as well. So there you have it. Dylan Brooks, to me, is going to be this season's Canadian Defensive Player of the Year.
Well, I know you, you've always been a Brooks fan, and his numbers are there. He's top notch. This year I went with the fan base and I chose Lou as well. Just cause I mean, that's kind of his bread and butter, but he's also, I like to see guys, you know, if they've kind of established themselves as a defensive player, like we mentioned about Dylan last year too. Dylan had to, like, the expectation is that Dylan's going to score a little bit now too. Like, he needs to be able to create and provide some offense. And Lou has started to develop that a little bit. He's working on a three-point shot. He's going to try to knock down that open jumper. So I like that, you know, defensively, they're both really strong. But they're both expected now to provide a little bit of scoring as well. And I just like, I've just become a Lou fan. Like, you know, it's hard to watch OKC at times. They're not very good. Shea was out. I mean, I want to watch the Thunder on a Tuesday night just because Shea and Lou were playing, but it wasn't very often this year that that was the case. So, you know, he's going to make me tune in. And yeah, he's my choice for a defensive player of the year.
Oh, could be. They might increase after this draft. We'll see.
Yeah, that's for sure. That'd be interesting. A lot of picks. Most improved Canadian NBA player. The fan base at 62%. This one was pretty overwhelming for O'Shea Brissett of the Indiana Pacers. Where are you going with this one, Scott?
This one was a little tough too. You know, it's kind of funny. Like I said, it was a season of it was a difficult season for a lot of guys. You know, I think Wiggins already made this jump last year. I think Chris Boucher made the jump last year. I think, you know, under the radar, you might be able to argue for a guy like Josh Primo or somebody like that because they just, you know, they're going to only do nothing but improve. I went with O'Shea as well. But a lot of that was because no one clearly jumped out to me this year. You know, like, I think preseason when we did a show, we were all hyping up on Nikhil and that just was a complete cluster this year. And did not go the right direction. You know, guy like Brandon Clark, it's a bounce back year. Dwight Powell had a great kind of, you know, there's all arguments there. O'Shea sort of broke out last year. But he only had like 20 games, 23 games, and had a really good playoffs. And then he kind of reverted at the start of this year. He was not showing much at the start of this year. This was just, you know, a little bit, it was rotation, you know, too many bodies or things like that. But he had an awesome post-All-Star. So, you know, I think he was like 8 points, 6 rebounds, 2.5 pre-All-Star. And then, wait, no, I'm looking at wrong stats there. That was RJ I was looking at. O'Shea was 7 points pre-All-Star, 5 rebounds, 1 assist. But efficiency was kind of a little bit iffy, you know, 41% from field goal, 33% from three-pointer, 64% from the line, only playing 20 minutes a game. Post-All-Star, he kind of pushed that up, 14 points per game, 7 rebounds, 2 assists, a little bit better on efficiency, you know, 42% from the field, 37%, you know, that's a good jump at three-point. Moved from 33 to 37 on three-pointers, 78% at the line. Moved up to 31 minutes a game. He was hitting kind of 2 three-pointers per game. He, you know, jumped into a legit starting role for the Pacers. He, you know, but the thing about O'Shea is his bread and butter is kind of not really the scoring. It's really the non-scoring departments that he kind of he's one of those kind of lunch bucket guys. He's really defensively versatile. He's probably one of the best defenders on the Pacers. He's the only guy on their team that can kind of guard all positions. You know, might be a little hyperbolic there, but he's the only guy who can. You know, have a chance to guard all positions. He's better as a help defender than really in one-on-one situations. But you know, keeping him in the starting lineup really helps the Pacers with creating a defensive identity. So he's kind of become one of those glue guys. He'll probably get even better on defense, tighten up the efficiency. He's an above-average rebounder at his position. Which has been an issue for the Pacers for a long time. Yeah, you know, there's talk about him, you know, he the Pacers can have him for another year at like a bargain. I think it's like 1.8 million or something like that, but they're talking about preactively, you know, declining that and extending and renegotiating him over the summer, because they don't want him to get to kind of restricted free agency next summer. That's what he's kind of put in front of these guys. You got to remember, this guy was a borderline NBA player. I don't think, you know, a couple of years ago, I don't think any of us really thought he was an NBA player 3 years ago when he was at Syracuse. He wasn't that interesting at Syracuse. He really kind of stepped it up in the G and has continued to step it up with the Pacers. He's probably their projected starting small forward for next season, you know, pending draft and trades and things like that. And for a guy that was barely in the league last year, he really only kind of caught on for the last 20 games. That's a huge improvement, and that's my most improved Canadian player for this year.
Well, I love it, because I took O'Shea as well, and he's like, this jump that you just mentioned has been ridiculous, and he's become a key piece. He's a starter for the Pacers. They're looking at him, and I'm glad you brought up the contract situation, because he's such a value that, you know, they realize what they have here, and they don't want to let that get to free agency, right? So they're just, you know, they know what they have now, and they want to lock him up. And he's made the Pacers really evaluate him as a future piece. And it's nice to see, you know, he got the opportunity, and I don't think anyone else this year, because of the weird year, like you mentioned, is such a strange year. And we can't keep saying, yeah, Andrew was better this year than last year, but he's made that jump. And Chris, like you said, so this is O'Shea's year. So definitely my vote for most improved player. And it's nice to see, right? It just makes another guy that we can kind of put on top of the mountain in terms of Canada basketball to, you know, celebrate and cheer for. And so it's good for him. Let's go.
And he can fill that kind of Swiss Army knife role for the national team as well. He does a lot of things, you know, pretty good, and it's like super versatile. And he seems like the guy who's just like, hey, you know, give me that role and I'm going to fill it to the best of my ability. Funny thing on this, Matty, is like, I wonder if he's one of the better or best contract values in the league. And then it brings me back to like how criminally underpaid Lu Dort is. I think he's like, you know, 1.7, 1.8 mil a year or something like that. And same similar situation where the Thunder might renegotiate this summer. They don't have to, but might just proactively do it so they can kind of lock him up and goodwill him. But this is a funny story. I don't know if you knew this, but Lu Dort is so underpaid that he was paid a bonus because the OKC was under the salary cap this year. And if you're under the salary cap, you have to take the difference between the salary cap and what your total salary is and split that up and give it to all the players. So that effectively doubled his salary this year. Wow. That's how far underpaid he was. So luckily or thankfully, he was probably paid, you know, above $3 million this year, when his you know, actual salary is probably 1.7, 1.8 or something like that.
I just want to bring up a quick point. You mentioned O'Shea in terms of Canada basketball, senior men's national team, sort of that Swiss Army knife. Plug him in. He's going to fill a role. He's going to produce. He is this generation's, in my opinion, Melvin Edgem. Similar game. Melvin was maybe a little stronger, a little more tougher on the glass, if you will. But O'Shea is that similar player that I think if we had a consistent core of 6, 7, 9 NBA guys, that's O'Shea's role on this team.
Yeah.
And he's just going to come in there and he's going to provide you good minutes. He's going to produce.
Yeah.
And, but he's a legit, you know, Melvin had sniffs of the NBA, so to speak. Probably should have been there. But O'Shea is that legit NBA guy now doing this role on the national team. So I just want to put that out there. I see him as that big time.
If we're going to shut out Melvin Edgem, then I gotta jump in on this. And I'm super happy to see him in that senior national 14 summer corps, along with Kevin Pangos, I might add, because I think that FIBA experience is so incredibly important, but all the stories we hear out of Edgem and Pangos is they are such good culture guys. They coach the NBA players up. They teach them how to play FIBA, which is a very different game. People got to respect how different FIBA is. I won't get into all the rule differences, but it's a right. very, very different game. And these guys are like coaches in practice. They're coaches on the floor. Edgem's, on the other side of 30 now. And I don't even know if he's top 6-8 guys in Canadian guys in Europe anymore, but he's so valuable on the leadership and the intangibles and help the experience and helping these guys, on the FIBA side of things. So I don't know if I think people who follow the national team kind of know that and aren't surprised to see him in that final 14, but other people who might be a little bit newer, might be like, who's this guy? And who's Kevin Pangos? He got third string cut by the Cavs this year, but they're right. very important guys to the team.
A real quick point, and I've seen little sort of conversations about this online with guys like Melvin, Pangos, you can even throw a Wilcher in those. The other Canadian guys know how good these guys are. They've all played together growing up through the different, age group levels. And I think those guys are a good reminder, for the top NBA guys, like, hey, look, these guys are my bros and I know how good they are. And this is how fortunate I am to be at this level where, a guy like Melvin couldn't, he had summer league like stints or whatever, but he couldn't stay in the NBA. Kevin got his first shot this season and Wilcher's had sniffs early on. I think they are good to have at camp and with the team because they remind the guys like, look, this is what it's about. Sometimes, Shea is super skilled. Jamal is all world and Andrew's our best athlete, but this is how that fine line of like, you need a lot of luck too. You need opportunity. And I think they love having those guys at camp for that reason. They push them, culture guys, and they keep them in check, maybe humble them and say, hey, like these guys are real good pros. They just didn't get the break that I got. So I just think it speaks a lot to have them mentioned at the core, at camp. The guys playing for the program or Rowan and Nick and these guys that are coaching or managing it. I mean, they love Melvin Edgem. Like he is their favorite player. Like he's just, he's going to suit up no matter what. And him and his family had the unfortunate tragedy this year. So it's nice to see Melvin mentioned. I'd love to see him at camp and, he's a friend of the podcast too. So much love to Melvin and his family. Yeah. Where do I want to go? Let's go the best dressed Canadian NBA player. This is a fun one. The fans, I don't know if we got a younger fan base here pulling this, but Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, 42% was the fan pick.
Yeah.
For us guys on the other side of 40, who's your pick, Scott? Who do you got for the
contract? Oh, man. Like, I'm a West Coast guy, right? So, flip-flops and shorts and a T-shirt's high fashion out here. So maybe I'm not the best one to pine on this, but I'm definitely going with the fan vote. Last year, I might have been a little enthralled by Dylan Brooks's craziness and the sunglasses and the crazy outfits he was showing up with. But listen, Shai's got style. And, it's clear this is a passion for him. Outside of basketball, I think fashion and design is probably his big second passion. Steve Nash, it was soccer. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, it's fashion and design. So this year, there was a big GQ spread on him. He was kind of a star at Fashion Week. I think he was quoted, take this quote out of GQ. He kind of says, hey, in my rookie year, I was wearing more known brands, name brands, higher end brands. This year, I've tried to be a little different. Like I said before, everyone at this level can get the new Louis Vuitton piece or the new Gucci piece. I've tried to shop at stores that have brands that aren't known and pieces of clothing that aren't easy to find. So he's becoming this, like, you know, this trendsetter, this kind of edgy guy that's just like finding stuff and discovering stuff and putting people on the map. Like, he's an influencer. He's a legit influencer on the fashion side of things.
Right.
So, you know, some other guys will show up here and there, and Shay, I think this year, he could probably get this every year, but we're gonna have to mix it up. But Shay's best dressed guy in the NBA.
Well, and
probably, like, you hear what I said there? In the NBA, not just Canadian.
Yeah.
He might be your best dressed guy in the NBA.
I know. He's like, listen, I have to kind of be big on Instagram too, just for the podcast, and I'm not a huge most social media guy. I've tried to embrace it, obviously, with the Canada basketball stuff. And so anyway, on Instagram, it's great to see these guys, you know, what they're rolling up to on game day. So my choice kind of in reference to that is Dwight Powell this year.
All right.
Dwight has elevated his game. On game days, he's wearing like these slim custom fitted suits. He looks sharp, man. He looks like he's ready to hoop. He looks cultured and sophisticated. I like what he's doing. You don't see a ton of guys dressing that way. He just looks about his business. So this year I'm going to give it to Dwight. I like his look. Dwight's my guy.
I like it.
Let's go round out the men. Actually, let's go. I put it out for the MVP for the Canadian women this year. I had Bridget Carleton on the poll, and I went with two of the college players because they had big seasons. Aaliyah Edwards and Leticia, their national champion. Kia was hurt. The fans went with Bridget Carleton, I think, mainly because of her success with the national team. She was big in the qualifiers, hitting some big shots, and she was really consistent. And they're going to play in the FIBA Women's World Cup this September in Australia. You got a vote here, Scott? I know you're
trying. Yeah, I'm with the fans on this one. Just Bridget Carleton, and this is honestly more familiarity, and I'm not as familiar with the NCAA players on the women's side, I have to admit. And just knowing Bridget and kind of what she's done and her role with the national team, and that's kind of an obvious and clear pick to me, but that might be partially out of ignorance. But
no, fair enough. And then I went with her too. I thought she was really big this summer, or sorry, through the winter windows there. And then she plays big minutes in the WNBA as well with the Minnesota Lynx. Key player there, and you know, somebody that the women's team and programs are going to definitely need big time come September. I'm not sure that Kia is really suiting up yet in Phoenix to start their season. I saw her in street clothes the other night, so I don't think she's really getting minutes right now. So I think come this fall in the Women's World Cup that Bridget is going to be a key player for the women's program, and shout them out. Looking forward to seeing how, you know, they fare in Australia as well.
Yeah. And shout out, just probably worth pointing out that there is a big article in The Athletic today talking about WNBA expansion for the first time in a long time.
Yeah.
And Toronto's kind of probably on that short list. You know, news in that article that the couple organizations in Toronto, MLSE as well, had tried to purchase teams in the past and were unsuccessful. And let's keep fingers crossed. Hope maybe we'll see the WNBA in Toronto.
Yeah, agreed. Okay. Favorite Canadian basketball player. I just wanted to throw this out there, see who everybody was feeling right now. I believe on the polls, I put current players. So I don't know if I would have thrown the GOAT on there, Steve Nash, if he would have just won it. But we did all current players. I put Kia Nurse on there. She fared really well. Yeah, just a fun one to just see who the fans like overall from all of our Canadian players. The fan base picked SGA at 71%. Who's your favorite player right now, Scott?
I'm taking liberty with this one, and I'm taking current with a little bit of grain of salt as well. And I'm going just because of some history here, and this player I've been following since he first stepped on an NCAA floor, seeing a ton of his games in the NCAA. Kind of was rooting for him all along. Loved him when he shows up for the national team. Hoping he would crack the NBA. He had his chance this year. It didn't go very well. This is Kevin Pangos. And maybe it's maybe he's the most relatable NBA player. I don't know. Being a 6'2 or 6'3 white guy myself, probably with short arms as well. But KP he's been so good in Europe, and it's a big step to the NBA in the sense some guys transition well. I always think kind of it's tough for high usage ball dominant players out of the EuroLeague to make it in the NBA because they can't be high usage ball dominant guys in the NBA. Guys like Shane Larkin and Mike James, those guys are awesome in Europe. They're kind of just another guy in the NBA. Role players, Ken Birch is a good example of a guy who was an elite role player in Europe. He was not like a star of a team. He was just that guy who played killer defense and played his role to an elite level. He was able to transfer to the NBA and still be like a good, role player in the NBA. So maybe my hopes that were up with Kevin Pangos, but he didn't really get in a good situation. He ended up being kind of third guy in Cleveland. They were kind of panicking from not having enough point guards the season before. Didn't get a lot of run, and then got a couple guys got hurt, and he got thrust into kind of a starting role for three games. That's probably not what he's suited for. And the NBA is just bigger, longer, faster, more athletic. He's a small guy, not much of a wingspan. Maybe it's a little bit tougher to get shots off. Guys close out a lot quicker, and with the long arms on wing defenders, it's just harder to get shots up. Didn't work out for him. I'm glad he took the chance. I'm glad it happened. I don't know if he'll ever get another chance. He quickly got scooped up by CSKA, which is one of the biggest budget EuroLeague clubs out of Moscow. He signed a contract the day before the invasion of the Ukraine started. Right. So I think he tried to back out of that, but I don't know what's going on with that, if he's obligated there or what. But he was tied to Olympia Milano, which is Milan's EuroLeague team, and was supposed to be signing there. That's assuming he gets out of that contract. But I just have followed him from day one. So I was so happy that he got the chance, and them the breaks.
Hey, and you know what? We know he's going to be a guy that always suits up for Canada. I mean, look at, he said, yeah, 3-year commitment, I'm in. I'm on the summer core. And it was unfortunate to see time cut short in Cleveland. But, he looked like he was heading overseas to a good contract, and then the unfortunate invasion. But, we know Kevin will bounce back. I got for my players, this is tough for me. And I mentioned this to you a little bit before we recorded, but I love the new wave, the youngsters that are really putting a lot of Canadian basketball on the map, taking a lot of attention to, what we have in the country, guys like Jamal, Shea, RJ. And they're going to be cornerstone guys for the program for years to come. I got a bit of a tie. I got Corey Joseph, Kelly Olynyk. And I mean, Corey is obvious, right? And I think, you know, he's going to do whatever he takes to play for Canada. He didn't have a great tournament in Victoria. I think Corey would be the first guy to admit that. But nonetheless, you know, he's in. He's going to commit his time. He's about to be a father. He's still willing to play for Canada. You know, and just going and really, you know, with him and Tristan at the same time at Texas and elevating the program and coming off long seasons in the NBA, still willing to play. He is, I've never really officially put it out there on the podcast, so to speak, you know, when I ask other guests about their top five, but I will say Corey's probably in my top five for sure. I just love what he's done for the game and the country. And then Kelly Olynyk, you know, I root for him. BC guy representing the West. He's had to work hard to maintain a spot in the league, develop his game. And you've said it a lot too. He's a key guy for the program in terms of the FIBA game. Comes from, you know, a great family of basketball people. He represents Kamloops. I got ties to Kamloops. I just love what he's been able to stay in the league and get a couple big contracts. Everything you hear about him, just a great guy. Everybody loves him. And when he plays, he produces. You know, he had really good stretches for the Pistons this year. So for me, I got to go Corey Joe and KO for my guys.
I like it. Good choices, yeah. Man.
Yeah. Let's hit Europe. Best player, Canadian player in Europe. I'll let you sort of do your Europe rundown. Your knowledge of the guys over there is so great, and the fan base loves you for that. You know, so your opinion, yeah. Who was the best player in Europe this season for the guys out of Canada? Yeah.
It's kind of funny because I'm into it because, like, these are the guys who show up for the national team over and over and over again. And so I kind of want to see how they're doing. I want to see how they're playing. There's more than the guys who show up for the national team, and you're always wondering, hey, are they going to play? Is Dylan Ennis going to finally show up and play for the senior men's national team? One of our best players in Europe. Are these young guys, you know, Isaiah Mike and, you know, guys like that, are they progressing? Are they moving up? You know, Trey Bell Haynes kind of keeps getting better every year. You know, where's he going to get to? So it's kind of a cool season in Europe for one main reason. You still have your kind of not many guys in the EuroLeague. For those that aren't familiar, EuroLeague is kind of the premier, you know, league. It's an intra-European league. So teams from different countries, kind of a closed league, easily the best league outside the NBA. Tons of ex-NBA players playing in it. Guys who young guys who also end up in the NBA. Don't have any guys there. I think Deshaun Pierre and Mariel Shayok were the two playing for Fenerbahce in Turkey. Deshaun Pierre is kind of a do-it-all kind of Swiss Army knife kind of defensive type player. He's doing great. Shayok kind of had a rough go in his first year in the EuroLeague, and he's out from there. Probably has to move down to kind of a lower level. One of the things I think jumped out to, you know, Kevin Pangos has always been kind of a star of the EuroLeague and took his run at the NBA and didn't work out. He'll be back in the EuroLeague next summer. Kyle Alexander could be a guy who moves up to the EuroLeague. Another guy I'll talk about who's kind of my MVP, we'll talk about in a second. One of the cool things this year was Spain's ACB, which is the best domestic league outside of the NBA. EuroLeague's kind of this intra-country league.
Right.
But amongst all the pro leagues in Spain and Russia and Turkey and Germany and France and Italy, Spain's ACB is kind of the highest level of domestic leagues. We had 12 Canadians playing there. So, you know, you go back 10 years, you might have one. You might have Carl English or, you know, LeVon Kendall or somebody like that. Maybe you had two. Right. 12 guys playing in the ACB. And they're, you know, these are imports. These are guys who are stars of their teams, right? Kyle Alexander, Phil and Tommy Scrubb, Cassius Robertson, Trey Bell Haynes, Dylan Ennis, Kenny Cherry, Aaron Dornikamp, Kyle Wilcher, Connor Morgan, Dejan Kravic, Olivier Hanlon. You know, that's a lot of guys.
Right.
So it's kind of fun kind of following what they're all up to. And a lot of those guys had great seasons. You know, some of the other leagues, worth talking about Tyler Ennis. He's finally had a healthy season and he's good. He's playing in Turkey.
Right.
He's kind of leading his team in Turkey and a great bounce back injury free year. Happy to see him. Don't think we see him for the national team. I think it's just too much to risk for him with the catastrophic injuries he's had in the past. Johnny B came close to winning the French Pro A scoring title. So there's guys all over the place. But the guy who was my MVP this year was Naz Mitrulong. And, wow. You know, he's a guy who's kind of bounced around the NBA and the G League and two-way contracts and never really caught on for the NBA and probably stayed around stateside for a couple years too long. And I've kind of always itching for him to get to Europe. And when you go over to Europe, most first-year players, the EuroLeague is just too high level. You know, it's a very different game over there. You got to get established. You got to learn the European game. You got to learn the FIBA rules. So most guys don't start in the EuroLeague, but that's where the money is. That's where the kind of the stardom is in Europe. So he started with a good Italian team, Brescia, and he was awesome. So, and you don't normally see kind of first-year players just jump in. And so he was in line for, came close to winning MVP of the Italian Serie A. This might not sound like much, but in Europe it is. He put up 17 points, 5 assists, 5 rebounds. Got to remember it's a 40-minute game and much more defensive game. He did that on kind of 45 from the field, 37% from 3, 85% from the line. Over two three-pointers a game. He just kind of jumped in there and you know, he even started a little rough for the first, you know, 5 games or so, but then he kind of took off. I'm almost certain he goes into the EuroLeague next year. For those people that don't know, he has Greek heritage.
Right.
He has never played for the Canadian national team. If he wants to get to the Olympics, he probably has a better shot with Greece, who is desperate for shooters to surround Giannis. It's not something Greece really produces, is kind of wing shooters too well. You know, he'd end up being a naturalized player from them, but his mom is Greek, and the Greek teams are kind of all over him. So you might see him at Olympiakos next year or Panathinaikos. I don't know if I pronounce the names right, but... close. Those two teams are kind of chasing him. He probably ends up at one of those two teams and in the EuroLeague next year. So he's kind of my Canadian MVP.
Wow, you surprised me with the choice, but you know your European guys, so I'll take your word for it. Anybody else you kind of want to talk about over there, or their seasons, or
just I know you didn't ask for most improved player, but. You know, sure. I kind of have really been watching. There's a couple things. I want to point out Jackson. I like watching these guys at the lower level European leagues. It's a huge pyramid, right?
Right.
It's all these different leagues, and you got to work your way up. A lot of these guys can start in a league that they're not ready for. Jackson Rowe, who was a Cal State Fullerton guy a couple of years ago, I think started in the French first division. Didn't go very well. He ended up in Sweden, which is a much lower level. Not much lower. It's a lower level. Kind of a feeder into some of the better domestic leagues. And he killed it in Sweden. You're probably going to see him jump back up to, you know, French first division, Germany's BBL, ACB or something like that. I think he had a good season as kind of most improved. And then I've always been watching guys like Trey Bell Haynes has been kind of climbing the ladder. He had the same sort of thing, maybe bit off more than he could chew in his first season. I think he was in the BBL, the German Bundesliga, the first year. Didn't go so well. I think he went to, it was Finland, I think, not Sweden, and then killed it in Finland. moved back to the BBL and was near MVP level in the BBL. So sometimes these guys just need a year or two to get comfortable with a different game, right, and different expectations and whatnot. So Trey Bell Haynes, after being awesome in the BBL last year, moved to the ACB, Spain's first division. That's a big jump up. Germany's kind of a, you know, secondary domestic league. And jumps up to the ACB, which we kind of said is the best, you know, European domestic league. And he kind of was the main signing, second main signing for a team called Rio Briogan, who was just promoted from the second division. They signed Dasnan Musa, which is a ex New York Nets player, Brooklyn Nets player that kind of flamed out. And both those guys carried that team to kind of a surprising, you know, above 500, I think, record, which is surprising for kind of a recently promoted, you know, you just, and it's funny, those leagues, right? The last two, if you come last or second last, you get pushed down the second division, and the first and second place teams from the second divisions move up. So everyone's trying to avoid being relegated. And when you're in the second division, it's just a huge, there'll be these tiny little towns and their team gets, you know, promoted up into the top division. And that's kind of where he was, and he played awesome again. So he was one of the best players in the ACB, best point guards in the ACB. So I'm kind of watching him this summer to see where he ends up. He probably moves up to a better ACB club, somebody that's playing in the Euro Cup or the FIBA's Basketball Champions League. I don't think he's EuroLeague material yet. If he keeps improving like he's been doing the last couple of years, maybe he gets there. But I'm kind of hoping he gets up into kind of one of those better clubs and it keeps showing us what he's got. So he's kind of like my most improved player this year.
Nice. Appreciate that, man. Anybody else over there you want to talk about, or are you good with that?
I think that's good. I think we threw a ton of names out there. Yeah.
NBA draft day from a Canadian perspective. Yeah. We got guys in. We know Benedict is probably going to, you know, be the first Canadian. Shaden's in. Leonard has decided not to do college. What do you anticipate come draft day? Because, listen, I'll be the first to admit, you know, I'm following these guys. Like, hey, listen, Benedict, great tournament for Arizona. Montreal guy, we all know that. You know, Shaden's kind of been well documented in terms of, you know, he didn't even see the floor for Kentucky. Like, what do we really know about this kid? I mean, that's a lot of what the experts are saying. Like, hey, we haven't seen this kid really play. You know, Leonard Miller blew up, had a monster season, best player in Canada, great skill set. You know, Caleb Houston, you know, he's staying in. There's lots of rumors that he's got a first-round promise from a team. You know, what do you think we see come draft day for our Canadian players, man?
Yeah, this is a really, really interesting draft. I think probably one of the most interesting ones in the last decade. I think, yeah, you know, a few years ago we had a good crop of, like, you know, five, maybe it was six guys drafted. But we kind of knew them a little bit more. There's a lot of mystery amongst these guys. There's a lot of, like, we could be looking back in 5 years going, oh my God, what a draft. Or it could be a complete belly flop. You know, you don't know. I think the sure thing is Benedict Mathurin. I'm not too sure he's going to be the first Canadian selected, like you mentioned. There's a lot of, there's kind of a range where we're seeing with Shaden Sharp, right? So I don't think it's inconceivable that he goes first overall. Like, I don't think it happens, but there's right, definitely people kind of talking about it. Like, somebody could fall in love with that guy because he's got, like, the prototype of an NBA wing, like, to the T. Everything that if you were gonna get into a simulator and program your kind of modern NBA wing, this guy's got it on kind of a physical and athleticism level. there's no game tape on this guy at a decent level, right? So people don't know really know what you have. So maybe something comes out where, you know, people are turned off. But all it takes is one team to fall in love with him. And he definitely has the highest upside here of all these guys. A lot of the mocks are kind of putting him, you know, kind of in that 4 to 7 range. You know, I think a guy like Jaden Ivey's kind of rising a little bit. So maybe there's kind of a sure 4 and he's sitting there at like 5, 6, 7. But Benedict Mathurin kind of, I think, is more the sure thing here. But like, I don't know what his ceiling is relative to Shaedon Sharpe. Leonard Miller's like a complete wild card. You know, I just don't know enough about basketball to like sit there and tell you, you know, where this guy's going to be and what his archetype is. He's a weird player. He's got all sorts of kind of interesting elite skill sets, but he's really raw. That was shown at the combine in the exhibition games. He looked really lost out there, especially on defense. But he's the youngest guy in the draft, and what do you expect? You know, he needs time. So, you know, is somebody going to take him in a project? You know, I think pre-combine people were talking, you know, he can be a lottery guy, but I think that's just a lot of hype on social media and things like that. Okay. But again, all it takes is one team to kind of fall in love with him and say, hey, we're going to work on it. Yeah. Maybe he goes in the first round. Maybe he goes kind of later second. I kind of don't think he goes undrafted. I think somebody would roll the dice. Like in the second round, it's all about potential and you know, rolling the dice and things like that. He obviously kept his name in the draft, so he's not going to Kentucky or Arizona. The G League Ignite is still on the line. I don't understand how that is still an option. I'm like, why wouldn't you just whoever picks you in the second round, you're just going to play G League with them. I don't know why he would go with the Ignite. Maybe that's the backup option in case, worst case scenario, is he doesn't get drafted. But I think he's draftable. He just has such this interesting profile and skill set. He was awesome in the measurements and the athletic testing. All that was great. So I don't know what you got with Leonard Miller. I don't even want to tell you where I think he gets drafted. I don't know. Caleb Houston, another mystery man. Pre NCAA season, people were calling him lottery pick, and then he was not good at Michigan. He doesn't change from being a kind of a, you know, a nice kind of, you know, tall wing shooter, you know, lots of potential. I was, you know, asked me a month or two ago, I'm saying there's no way he's in this draft. He's going back to Michigan. He's staying in the draft. Lots of rumors out there that he's gotten a promise. Is in the first round or did somebody give him kind of an early second floor? Do you really stay in the draft for a early second floor? I don't know. There's a lot of questions there. It's going to be a real cool draft. Andrew Nembhard, who I was a little hard on through much of the season and just didn't think that this guy was a surefire NBA. He was awesome in the March Madness run. He killed it in the combine games. He was the best player in the combine games. Maybe that's just set up for him. You know, a older player, point guard, there's really no defense out there. So he's able to slice and dice and completely control the game and find easy passes. And just his mind was way above kind of a combine exhibition game, kind of seeing the floor and watching things unfold. So he's moved up in the mock drafts, you know, almost into the first round. You know, I kind of think he's a second round guy. I now think he's kind of higher than the mid 40s. You know, a couple months ago, he was kind of a undrafted to kind of late second round guy. Now he seems like more of a surefire draft pick, but you never know. Guy like that could just easily go undrafted and just be, he'll be immediately scooped up as a two way. Right. No doubt about that. Or some sort of undrafted free agent signing. So that's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 guys. Could all be in the first round. I don't know.
Yeah, it could be really
cool. I don't think so, but You never know.
Yeah, with Nembhard, he's I listen to the Sack and Jack podcast a lot. Your boy Robert Sacre there, and they talk Gonzaga, and they're hilarious. But you know, they talked a lot about Andrew this year, and like, he's deadly in the pick and roll, and he's very, very good at it. And if you were to compare him to like another Canadian player, I mean, like, obviously Steve was really good in the pick and roll in his day. Yeah. Corey is too. And Andrew has actually gotten stronger and put on size. He's physically bigger. So yeah, he looks good, and he had a great combine. So that was a name I had kind of neglected, but I think he's going to be a future, consistent player for the national team too. We touched on the summer core. That was sort of my next note. I don't think we got to beat that over the head. Any thoughts on Elijah Fisher, the phenom? He's kind of re-elevated, if you will, even at a young age, his game, to kind of put himself back in the limelight as far as being like a top guy out of Canada.
Yeah.
Committed to Texas Tech. The big man from Richland there, Fardaz, is going to go there as well.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on that commitment?
It's our new Team Canada for the 2003 season, 2023 season.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got thoughts on Elijah Fisher. You know, I might be old and crotchety and bitter, but I'm kind of like an anti-hype guy. And right. I don't know if there's been a player to get more hype than Elijah Fisher. Certainly more than, and I think, than Jamal Murray, because I think he was a little bit of a later guy to focus on. Maybe not RJ. Maybe Wiggins maybe had more, but he's up there, right? Because he was a very dominant, large 13-year-old who had YouTube highlight videos that wowed everybody, and he's like the best 13-year-old in North America or the world, right? And so there's everyone bought onto it, and you know, I talked to some of the media guys in Canada and Toronto, and they'll just kind of feed into it, because like, hey, people know Elijah Fisher, so we're gonna write about him, right? They don't know about Shaedon Sharpe. Nobody knew about him, right? So he doesn't get the press or the coverage until, you know, he goes to Kentucky or something like that. So Elijah Fisher's been on this hype train for a long time, and he was just bigger, stronger, faster at an earlier age than a lot of players. And as you saw him get to kind of 15, 16, 17, guys started catching up, right? His peer group started catching up, and he continued to kind of bully guys and get to the rim at will, but you didn't see him working on his outside shot, or, you know, not like I'm watching these things, but you didn't really see that become part of the game or an improvement or things like that. And then all of a sudden you see him drop from 1, 2, 3 in his class in the rankings for, Rivals or 24/7. And over the years, a 18-month period, he dropped into kind of like the 20s or the high 18s. And, you know, that's a big jump. Guys that are kind of coming in at, 19, 20, 21 in their class, those are not surefire NBA draft picks where everybody, this guy was the next big thing, right? And then he just kind of, turned it around and I'm sure there's a ton of work behind the scenes. I don't see this. I don't know this. I'm not tapped into any of this sort of stuff. He's been working his ass off since however old.
Right.
But, he kind of jumps on the AU circuit this year. He was hidden in COVID too. So he could have fallen in the rankings because nobody saw him, and he wasn't getting out there, and he wasn't playing in AU, and people hadn't seen him for a while. He played with the Canadian U19 team, but he was a couple years younger, and he was not star player on that team, and he looked okay, but he certainly didn't look like a RJ Barrett at 17 winning the gold medal in the U19 FIBA Worlds, right? Just dominating everybody. That was not Elijah Fisher on that U19 team. But you know, I'm coming back on board. He was really good in this last AU session, you know, season over the spring, and you're seeing him. You're seeing an outside shot coming. You're seeing more passing. You're seeing, big thing is defensive intensity. You're seeing this kid dominate games defensively. And you're starting to become that kind of total wing package. So I'm really excited about him at Texas Tech. I really want to see it. To see him with Fardaz is really cool. Those are maybe two NBA prospects there. They're going to be, Fardaz is going to be one of the better players in the NCAA next year. They might not be NBA guys. I don't know. He's gone kind of a bit of a U-turn for me through, I think, from overrated to, I think a lot of people kind of started to poo-poo him a bit, and perhaps he's a little bit underrated, but I'm really excited and on board to kind of see what he does at Texas Tech. And I'm glad he kind of went the NCAA route.
Yeah, I think one thing about Texas Tech, and they're in the Big 12, right? So that's a tough conference. It's physical. And, there's big programs that they just produce pros. And, if you're going to win that conference and you're going to buy in, you mentioned the defensive effort and intensity has increased on Elijah's part. I think, in a way, him going there, he recognized, this is going to allow me to show what I can do on both ends. And I think that was a good move for him. And it's great to see him sort of bounce back in terms of his ranking, because, we didn't get to see him through the pandemic nearly 2 years.
Yeah.
But he has developed a lot. He's gotten even stronger physically. If you wanted, him and Leonard Miller, top two guys in the country, and Shaden, but Shaden kind of came out of nowhere with the Nike circuit there. But, it's good to see. I mean, like you said, there's been this hype train and everyone's known about him since he was 13. That can't be an easy thing to sort of live with deal with. And by all accounts, the Instagram thing comes up following him. He does work hard. He works really hard. He stays humble. His family is humble. He's not just coaching. He's putting work in. So,
yeah, I feel bad kind of making any disparaging comments, right? He's a kid. And he's had the spotlight on him.
Yeah.
But, that with that spotlight, comes, kind of a critical eye to a degree, right? But he's working his butt off, and like I said, I'm excited and kind of really interested to kind of get back on board. I guess I was never on the hype train, but I'm now kind of, hopeful. That he's a future NBA player.
Yeah,
agreed. And I'm really excited. Just by the way, the U18 FIBA Americas starts in a couple days, and he's going to be headlining that team down in Mexico. I think it's in Tijuana, actually. I should be going to that, but 8-year-old softball kind of is consuming my life. But he's going to be headlining that team, and that's going to be a good opportunity to kind of see what improvements he's made to his game and how far he can carry that Canadian team.
Yeah, awesome stuff. Anything else you want to add, Matt, before I get you out of here?
No, I think the only other thing probably is just kind of recognize some of the other things Canada basketball is doing. The Global Jam, that's I think. Yep. You might have to correct me on the dates. I think it starts, is it July 4th, July 10th, July 4th?
I want to say it's July 4th. July 1st is a Friday. So the senior men's national team plays their game against the Dominican Republic on July 1st. And then I think Global Jam kicks off right away after the weekend, 4th or 5th, something like that.
So recognize that men's and women's kind of four U23 teams, kind of a festival of other stuff going on, 3-on-3 tournaments, stuff like that. We're slowly getting pieces of kind of a roster for the Canadian U23 team.
Yeah.
It's guys are under 23 are still RJ Barrett and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Nikhil and Lou Dort and all those guys, O'Shea, but you know, I don't think any of us expected to see them there. But so we expected kind of, it's going to be the NCAA guys. I was hoping some, you know, so far we've gotten some good NCAA players, Marcus Carr, Ryan Nemhard, Charles Bediako, Tyrese Samuel, and Oliver Maxime Prosper. So there's going to be more, but those are some good recognizable names for the U23 Global Jam. If anybody's going to, wants to go out and kind of watch them. There's still a big roster of really good players that, that could be on that team from, you know, there's a few pro players playing in Europe. There's a bunch of NBA guys. I don't think it's going to happen too much with the NBA guys, but you never know. You might see a Nate Darling show up or something like that, who was really good in the G League this year.
Right.
But that team will expand, but that's kind of a nice five names to start with.
Yeah, I wonder if they, I know Zach Edey is sort of slotted in with the senior team, but maybe they bump him down, ask him if he wants to play in that too. You never know. So
yeah
it's going to be a monster summer leading into the fall. The women's tournament, FIBA Women's World Cup in September. It's going to be an exciting time for the program, my friend.
I love it, Matty.
Yeah. Well, appreciate you coming back to join us. Looking forward to seeing what's in store for the program this summer. Take care, man.
Yeah, appreciate it. And thanks for having me on, man. I love it. Anytime you need me, I'm here for you.
Appreciate that. That's it for another episode of Canada Hoops. I want to thank our friend Scott Witter for pulling up. Thank you for downloading and liking us. Keep supporting Canada basketball. We will see you on the next episode.
Thank you for listening to Canada Hoops.